This is a replay of the Tuesday night, July 7th WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. And I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number for OneVoIP. For the best deal and good customer service, it's OneVoIP. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. 3 hours to spend together, and I hope you'll join me. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. I've just spent the last 2 hours trying to cull your requests, and a lot of them, to say the least, and trying for equal opportunity, something for just about everybody if we get to them tonight. And we're going to start off with Mike in Elmwood Parks, because he had wanted Linda Scott, I've Told Every Little Star. But yes, some of you came up with creative names for songs you want to hear, but we'll go over that as well. All right, you know, I joke, although it's not at all funny, that the only way to get off my callback list is to die. And increasingly, that's been happening. And I found out within the last week that, yeah, fate struck again. Not only was he on my callback list, but I had an email in my inbox for the last 2 years when he said, sure, I'll join you on WGN. And I meant to write back and say, great. Yeah, well, too late now. Ray Smithers. If you are a big Chicago radio fan and know the inside out of everything internally and also suburban stations as well, you've run across Ray. Absolutely a production wizard. Yeah, I worked with him at what we all like to call Radio Poland, KPOL in Los Angeles. But it was Michael O'Shea who had hired him in the mid-70s to come down to WFTL, WGLO in Fort Lauderdale. But he was one of the more amazing people I knew and just an all-around great guy. And we're going to talk a lot about Chicago radio. He had a wonderful black lab. He named it Wen, W-Y-E-N. And I said, after Des Plaines? And he said, yep, he was the program director there as far as that goes. But one of my favorite on-air faux pas was Ray. And I don't remember if it was Y-E-N or some other suburban station when he was doing the sports and proudly proclaimed that the Bulls balled Beatamore. And that by the way, led to him laughing about it, tipping over the chair, practically sliding down the hallway. And meanwhile, the staid owner comes in right about then. So, yeah, what can I tell you? But he was a great asset to radio, and my loss that I didn't stay in touch. So if you were a fan of Ray Smithers, sorry to say he's now past tense. Yeah, very, very sad. Also, while I was doing that, I was looking up someone else that we knew at the time, and I thought, is Frank Oxerart still alive? Because he had been general manager of KFWB, so he would have been, been about 50 in the, around 1980. And I checked it, and my God, he made it to 91. He died within the last year. And he was also a very colorful character in more ways than one. I remember one day I was leaving him a note, and so I decided I'd leave it in his car in the parking lot at KFWB. And, it turns out I wanted to meet up with him later and we'd do something or whatever. But the content was unimportant, but the location was apparently more important than I realized, because apparently they had been having theft thefts in the building and the parking lot. And so apparently after I left, the guard came to get the note and bring it to Frank. Fortunately, there was nothing in it that anybody couldn't see, but nonetheless. But anyway, 91 years old. And also found out that last year, last thing he did, pretty much published a book of poetry. I think he called it I Write. So, of course, I had to get on Amazon and buy a copy. But, yeah, I probably hadn't talked to him in 20 years, but it seems like it was just yesterday. All right, so apologies if you don't get off my callback list, but the best thing is to call on the air, because I will answer 888-876-5593, and we will talk. I do my best with email, but I get overwhelmed sometimes, and I delete them en masse, although a lot of requests from email in the last couple days, and we will get to them before the week is out. Yeah, I can't say before the night is out, because there's too many for that. And but as far as the week, yeah, you bet it. Now, I've misplaced the magic twanger. Oh, there it is. All right, so fine. We'll start off with Mike in Elmwood Park. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Good evening, Valley. I got a couple of requests.
Well, you're getting Linda Scott first off the bat.
Beep Beep by the Playmates and Barbara Ann by the Regents.
Regents. Okay, wait a minute. Barbara Ann. Better than the Beat Boys version, I'll tell you that. And Beep Beep.
you're right.
Oh, God, yeah, I know. I remember that came out at the end of 65. It was terrible. Okay, Mike in Elmwood Park. All right, we'll get to them this week and enjoy Linda Scott coming up next.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Raleigh. You have a good week.
All right, you too. Thanks. So, 888-876-5593. Oh, and Cindy, I've got one down for her tonight, too. So, Cindy, I believe you're getting the Marvelettes, Beechwood 45789 tonight, but what else you want?
You don't have to. You can just play that one and not the other ones I requested.
Oh, no. Well, I've got A World Without Love coming up later in the week. Don't worry about that.
Okay, but I have a really good request.
Uh-oh.
It's really good. You know the song. It must be Raindrops.
Oh, Raindrops, D. Clark. D. Clark, Raindrops, Falling from My Eyes.
That's one of the best songs I've ever written. It's
a wonderful song, yeah. Well, most everything D. Clark did was just terrific. But, yeah, Raindrops is biggest hit by far.
And then, yes, I don't know. I had to make a bunch of phone calls over a bunch of stuff. And I thought, well, I better follow through and make more. And it was just too much for me. And I got real, like, screwy in the head. I took it easy today. And
good.
I took my meds and it all went away. And then what else happened? It was just on Google. I didn't see it on the news. But an oil refinery blew up in Texas, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what that means.
Yeah, well, do I know what that means? I mean, it means that there was an explosion and a fire at Valero. Valero is in Port Arthur, but that actually did not happen today. So there's been a cleanup for a while on that. I think that's probably been 3 or 4 months. If something else happened today, I know they're still doing the cleanup at Valero, but that's the only one I know. And
Spanish sounding town, I think, in Texas, or maybe do they have oil in New Mexico?
Yes and no, for the most part, no, but yes, I don't know of anything there. The big news as far as that goes that I saw that surprised me actually was that a building in Midtown Manhattan, 30 stories, is about to fall down. And I thought, well, there's a story for you. So I'll add to oil refinery explosion. But like I say, Bolero's the last one I knew.
But Mike said he said that these oil refineries blow up because of lack of maintenance. They cut costs or something.
Well, not necessarily. All things are bigger than one sentence. But I'm wondering whether you're confusing Valero, which, like I say, was in Texas, about 3 months ago. Ukrainian drones hit Russia's largest oil refinery in Omsk today, and that's Western Siberia. So that happened.
Oh,
But that's the only oil refinery blow up of which I know.
Okay, because I don't pay attention to what I read is like I used to. Like something with my mind after Chuck died.
All right. Well, I think you might be confusing the two, but anyway, nothing else in the states of which I know. But if I'm wrong, someone will obviously call us, and we will get your marvelettes on before the night is out.
Well, they said something about, you know, just what I meant was when I said, you know what that means, you know, gas prices going up.
Well,
again,
not necessarily. Again, it's nice to have a one-sentence summarization, but it's never that simple. I know about Valero, but I wonder if anything happened in Baytown. I'm going to look. I know the places where there are refineries, but
Mexican or like a not Mexican, Spanish sounding name of a city somewhere.
Well, hell, that could be anything, including Amarillo, although we don't say it pronounced. We don't pronounce it correctly. But
somewhere in like the West Coast. Somewhere, Texas, Arizona.
Well, you'll hear it and you'll let us know.
All right.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it, Cindy. Yeah, I don't know. All right, so Texas slaughters Spanish words like nothing I've ever seen. Yeah, just I remember when I moved to Austin and I said I was, the place I was living was on San Jacinto. And they said, no, it's not San Jacinto, it's San Jacinto. Oh, yes, I am in Texas, home of Amarillo, so why should I be surprised? All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888-RALEIGH. Speaking of the English language and the correct terms for various things, have you ever wondered what is the correct term for someone in all 50 states? Yeah, I know, an American. But I mean, individual, obviously, Indiana, Hoosiers, and no one knows for sure about why. But it's interesting to go through all of them to see what the accepted term is for their residents. And the one I got to was Illinois. And when I read this, I said, I don't know how to pronounce this, but we'll go over some of them coming up on WGN Radio.
Dumb.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Linda Scott, very interesting artist all the way around. That was on Canadian American, which was Leonard Zimmer's label, and he had an office in New York and an office in Manitoba, so hence Canadian American. And probably the biggest act until Linda Scott was Sano and Johnny. But she was a precocious kid in New Jersey, Linda Sampson. In fact, when she was 11 years old, she was already trying to break into the music business, and it wasn't too long before she actually had a song on Epic, In Between Teen, within a few years. And, you know, she did Arthur Godfrey's show and all that kind of stuff. And and then she was in high school when she signed with Canadian American. And I've told her Every Little Star was a standard, obviously, Jerome Kern and all that. And but it made her, over a million copies were sold, so she did well. Now, interestingly, she wrote the follow-up Don't Bet Money, Honey. Got to top 10 nationally. And, you know, that was pretty good. And then actually Don't Bet Money, Honey was a standard. It was the third that was her own composition. But no, Starlight, Starbright, I think. In any event, she did enough that she wound up being in, you know, the 60s movies like Don't Knock the Twist. She composed Yes Siree for Chubby Checker in that. And in 63, when she graduated high school, she became part of Caravan of Stars national tour. And it was interesting because Caravan of Stars was in Dallas and slated to perform that night. And when I say that night, it was the night that Kennedy had been shot and assassinated. And so obviously the tour didn't make that stop. But she continued to, in fact, I guess the Beatles really knocked her off the charts. She would really something that did nothing. But she wound up as part of Where the Action Is, you know, another Dick Clark production with Steve Alamo producing. And by the 70s, that's it. And she had been an Army lab tech for a while. She got a degree in theology and all of that, and she wound up being a teacher. And so I think she's still alive. She'd be 81 today. So that's all I know about Linda Scott, which isn't a whole lot. So we'll get to Karen in Illinois. Maybe she knows. We'll get to these. Illinoisans, Illinoisans, or do you pronounce the S? Illinoisans. Yeah. I have absolutely no idea because, of course, I'm just seeing it. But I did find this article fascinating in terms of what people have been called in the various 50 states. So it's interesting. In Hawaii, they take great umbrage if you call yourself a Hawaiian, even if you were born there, if you're not native to Hawaii. However, non-native inhabitants of Alaskans are Alaskans. So as opposed to Alaskan natives. So everybody has a stake in that, I suppose, though I think most of the Alaska natives actually go by the name of their indigenous tribes. But Alabamian, that's how it started out. Now they take Alabaman. Same with Arizona in print. 1857, Arizonians. It sounds like from another planet. And that got quickly changed to Arizonan and has been used since 1866. Oh, Arkansas. Oh, here we go. All right, we'll talk about it after the news and hopefully get your calls too coming up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. Rufus's little girl, Carla, for you. Yes, if you have her big hit, Gee Whiz, flip it over. You'll hear For You. Originally on satellite and sold to Atlantic to get some coverage there, distribution. But originally satellite right there in Memphis. So there you have it. And that was Evelyn in Michigan, who sends emails from time to time with some fine requests, such as For You. And I've got two more for her. We'll get them before the week is out. All right, so 888-876-5593. Like I say about this, I've got the list of how to pronounce the terms for residents of every state. And it seems the rule of thumb here in all 50 that I can see is those where they were coming up with things in the mid-1850s, even before some more states. They like the I-A-N, Ian, like Alabamian. But shortly thereafter, someone came to their senses and said, just drop the I. So they have like Alabaman. Yeah, and of course, Alaskan, obviously. Same with Arizona, Arizonian and Arizonan. Arkansas, all right. So it started out as Arkansian and then Arkansan. But in the 1870s, Arkansas-er. Yeah, that's okay. Why not? California, we know Californians. Now, Colorado, when I was reading about this, I didn't realize that there were actually specific rules for this stuff. Add an A-N suffix when a place name ends in an O. But if the place name is of Spanish origin, then drop the O before adding an N. Well, that led to a bit of a jumble for Colorado, to say the least. So is it Coloradans or Coloradoans? I say Coloradans. And don't get me started on whether it's Colorado or Colorado. That was once a big fight when I was on the air in Denver. We finally decided it was Colorado and stuck with it. But then you've got Connecticut. A Connecticut. You know, I got to stop and say, because when you look at how it is in how it's written, it looks like Connecticuter. But obviously it's Connecticuter. And that's why they have an unofficial nickname for Connecticuters. They have Nutbeggers, which has to do with a local legend. Delaware, Delawarean, yeah, and not I-A-N, E-A-N, obviously. Floridian, obviously, and Georgian, okay, we know that. But like I say, Hawaii was one of those where you're not a Hawaiian unless you're a native to Hawaii. You're just a resident. You're a resident of Hawaii. Yeah. Idaho, Idahoans. All right. Now we get to Illinois. Yeah. People who reside in Illinois are called Illinoisans, 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 Illinoisians. I see it all. I have absolutely no idea. So we'll just go with Chicagoans. But you've lived in Illinois probably most of your life. What do you call yourself? Obviously Indiana solved it by deciding they were Hoosiers. I don't know of any such nickname for Illinois. But Karen in Chicago, so what's the deal?
Hi. You know, when I came here, I moved here from Wisconsin, and I was in a class, office skills class at Lighthouse, and I asked my instructor, because I didn't know, and she told me a Illini.
A Illini?
Yeah.
Sounds like a secret society. But
there's a football team, the Illini, and I wondered, you know, I asked my teacher, I didn't know, I just came here from Wisconsin, and I don't even remember how it came up, and that's what she told me.
Say it again, because I've already lost it.
Illini. Yeah.
Well, I guess that's no better or worse than Illinoisans.
You know what I want to know? What the heck do they call people from Massachusetts?
Oh, well, I can tell you that, actually.
Holy cow.
As far as that goes, they do not have an original term for this. They have an official state cat, an official state donut, but mostly they use Bay Staters or Massachusettsans.
Oh, okay. I'm just thinking about the word. I couldn't imagine how they could change that.
Just put an A-N on top of it. But that's why, with Illinois, that's what I wondered. When you put an A-N after Illinois, does the S become verbalized, or is it still silent?
Yeah, and no, I don't know. I'm just hoping that I had to take her word for it, because it was my instructor. She was teaching secretarial skills, and I was in a typing class, typing and transcription, and I don't remember now how it came up. I think one of my family asked me or something, and I asked her, and that's what she told me.
Well, it's easy for you, being from Wisconsin. You're a cheddarhead. You're from behind the cheddar curtain. But I realize that's probably not official. So I assume as a Wisconsin, that's exactly what it is, a Wisconsin. I don't know.
I think Wisconsin is Wisconsinites.
Oh, I like that, Wisconsinites. Yeah, there you go.
That's what it used to be. Yes. At least that's how I knew it when I was growing up.
No, you're right. It's on the list that way. Wisconsinites. It's on the list just like that.
Yeah, because I went to the Wisconsin School for the Blind, and you encountered that a lot, you know. Different stuff like that. They wanted you to know, you know, what the hell you're talking about, I guess.
Interesting.
So, they use, and I knew Minnesotans.
Right, they use the ites for Wyoming as well, Wyomingites.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes.
Well.
That's why I've heard of it.
There aren't too many of them, are there?
Oh, well.
I mean, with the ITE.
Oh, I thought you meant people in Wyoming. No, there aren't many of those either.
No, but, no, I do.
No, well, no. Let's. No, mostly they're the ANs more than anything. But
okay.
As far as that goes, but I think those are the only two ites. I knew about Wisconsinite. And, you know, read about that, and I knew about Wyomingite, which never sounded right to me. Wisconsinite had a ring
to
it.
No, it sounds strange. Yeah.
But mostly, well, mostly they're ANs, Nevadan or Nebraskan or all that. New Hampshire has ites. New Hampshireites. They have ites.
Okay. Remember you were talking about the pronunciation Colorado and Colorado.
Of course.
Another one you used to get to me was Nevada and Nevada.
Well, right, it's Nevada. The same exact argument.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've been there, done that. Yes, it is Nevada. Yes, but
every now and then you hear someone say that.
Oh, I know, and it really does. It becomes a civil war. I got, you know, at least a week worth of talk radio out of this in Colorado. You know, everybody was hell-bent that it had to be their way, and it was almost an even split.
Wow.
Yeah,
and you don't want to offend somebody.
Well, exactly, but, you know, they offend easily if they care about that. The only thing that was bigger in Colorado was what I like to call the Great Brisket Wars. I don't know how I got on this topic, but whether it was a staple of Jewish food or it was a staple of barbecue, and which was better. And so the Texans called and were just screaming that it was barbecue. And a lot of Jewish people were saying, no, it's ours. It goes back to the old country. But I mean, I literally, it was almost a month worth of brisket talk. Now, the best part about that is people brought me brisket to prove their point. I ate it for a month.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, I bet you enjoyed that.
I did. In the final analysis, I had to go with barbecue. But because it seemed like the Jewish variety had, I don't know, onions in it or onion soup or something. I don't know. But it wasn't bad.
Okay.
Believe me, I'm not knocking it. It just didn't hold a candle to barbecue. But man, they fought for their side.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. I like a good barbecue myself.
Yeah, you betcha. All right. Well, thanks for the information.
So
appreciate it, Karen. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll get back to it. Cindy called back with, I don't know. I'm getting Illinoised about the concept, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on it nonetheless, especially if it's an Illinoisan. Is it an Illinoisan or an Illinoisan without the S? All right. So all these things that keep you up at night, but you know, it's a lot better than talking about the Strait of Hormuz when you get right down to it. So let's instead talk about, yes, Illinois, and you're going with that? Okay. Well, you would know the official word because you are the official pronouncer as far as I'm concerned, David. No, you do. You absolutely do. You are the voice of reason, and anything you say, we believe it. So Illinoisan. All right. All right. Thank you for chiming in. All right. So let's talk about the Sea Crane Company, another wonderful thing to discuss. And I want to mention their pocket radio right now. And in fact, I got an email. It was from Lisa and Juliet. Bruno, her dog, had a couple requests. Arf. And he was sitting there on the pillow right beside her CC pocket. Looks so cute. It is one of the most popular pocket radios on the market today, and apparently dogs like it too. But as far as people, it makes a great gift. It's the perfect go-to everyday radio. I keep one in my purse. It's got unbeatable AM and FM reception like everything Bob Crane has been involved with. Crisp, clear audio for its small size. You can listen using the included earbuds, tune for voice clarity, or with a built-in speaker if you like. it's just great. It's got presets. It's got a dial light, and it's got all sorts of bells and whistles, a lighted dial, the NOAA weather band, and it's very lightweight and durable, which it has to be for me because I'm hard on my toys. It's easy to hold with rubber sides, and it's got a pocket clip. If you go to ccradio.com, you can look at the CC Pocket Radio, and it won't set you back too much either. It is just a great addition to your audio arsenal. If you can't go online for some reason, they've got terrific customer service, and they'd love to hear from you. 800-522-8863. 800-522-TUNE. But if you can go online, man, the Sea Crane site is just a repository of great information as well as great products, ccradio.com. Look at that CC Pocket Radio. Now, after you do that, if you want to order on Amazon, it's available there, but you can order directly from the Sea Crane company as well, and I'd advise it. Yeah, you tell them Raleigh sent you on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Bobby Freeman, San Francisco born and bred. And yeah, it was on Josie, actually, in 1961. It was a wonderful song. He didn't write it, and neither did anybody famous. But anyway, as far as that goes. But he had been performing since he was a kid with the Romancers, not the East L.A. group, but the Bay Area group. And then, of course, 58 was just golden for him with Do You Wanna Dance, which he wrote. And so, yeah, all the reissues on that and remakes by other people did well. Then he came back with Come On and Swim in 65, and Sly Stewart wrote that, actually. But The Mess Around was a fine song as far as that goes, and it was a request right there for Lisa and Bruno in Joliet. All right, 888-876-5593. Mike is a first-time caller, and he is in Pecatonica, Illinois. I hope I said that right. Hello, Mike. Thanks for calling.
Pecatonica is correct. Thank you, Raleigh. Yeah. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I had a couple of additional information about Illinoisans.
Okay.
The Illini is the mascot of the University of Illinois. It's the comes from the Illiniwek tribe of Indians that occupied what is now like Iowa and Illinois.
Okay.
And I went to college in Mississippi, grew up and had lived in Illinois my entire life and still live in Illinois, and they referred to me as a Flatlander.
I love it.
Yeah, it was kind of comical.
Well, it really is, because Mississippi's flat as a pancake.
It is, except it has a lot of trees and not a lot of corn.
Well, yeah, there is that, indeed. All right, how did you wind up in school in Mississippi? I mean, most people, they take their SATs, you know, they open up the books, and Mississippi is not on anybody's mind. What scholarship did you get?
Well, I went to high school in LaSalle County, Illinois. I went to college at Hattiesburg at the University of Southern Mississippi and played on a baseball scholarship.
Okay. I knew there was a sports scholarship in there somewhere, because nobody goes to Hattiesburg voluntarily. So
well, yeah, it was It's a different world down there. It's a much different culture than what I grew up in northern Illinois.
And you thought you knew humidity in Illinois. Ah, you didn't know the start of it until you got there.
That is for sure. But I tell you, they were the most friendly, generous, kindest people I've ever been around.
That's terrific. All right. Well, thank you for the call. I really appreciate it, and I hope you'll do it again.
Thanks, Raleigh.
All right.
Good night.
Yeah. So, and yeah, I had a lot of friends from Mississippi, and I concur with Mike. Really good people. Yeah, I know. It's the brunt of a lot of jokes, even in the South. But, man. All right. So, let's see. Cindy called back. I think she's wanting to go with the Illini. So, what do you think, Cindy?
Yeah, I was going to give you the same information about they used to call the mascot Chief Illini at University of Illinois. And he used to do like a native dance before sporting events. And that was, I can't remember things. And that was banned because like Native Americans would go to school there and then they'd go to a sporting event and see the chief do that dance and they were like horrified.
Yeah.
But then it is Illinoisans and people in Illinois, and then the S is not pronounced. It's
okay.
Illinois.
All right.
But then the thing is, the weird thing about it is people in Illinois must have thought, well, like when I was younger, thought the whole world revolved around them because they used to think it was so ignorant and uneducated if somebody like talked to them on the phone from another state for some kind of business or something like that. You had contact and they called you Illinois.
Yeah.
Like called it Illinois and pronounced the S. People
right.
just were so offended by that.
Yeah.
And yeah. And then Michigan is an Indian word. Chicago is an Indian word. And the Muskegon River in Michigan, that's an Indian word.
All right. Good deal. Thank you, Cindy. Appreciate the callback.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. So, yes, indeed. My favorite, and it wasn't actually Illinois, it was Time Magazine. True story. 1975, I believe it was. Could have been a year either way, but I'm pretty sure it was 75. Did this article, and I don't know who wrote it, but Time was, you know, considered pretty solid journalism. And they talked about Illinois and its neighbor to the east, Ohio. And I thought to myself, okay, it's one thing to forget Indiana, but where exactly would you think it was? Yes, never got any copy on that. So we've got Brian and Seneca who's weighing in on this. So, all right, Brian, what do you think?
I pretty much have to agree with everyone else, because I'll be 62 at the end of the year, and I didn't hear any of those other demonyms for citizens of the great state of Illinois before tonight.
All right. Excellent.
Chief Illini, of course, the famous mascot for the U of I at Urbana-Champaign. And as far as getting bothered by people mispronouncing the name of the great state, that's never bothered me that much. But it's a real big red flag. If you're not from here, you're saying Illinois.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
We're in one of the Illinois. Where's the other Illinois?
Right, yeah. That's
ultimately, Illinois is that horrible screeching sound that constantly ratchets up your tax bill emanating from Springfield and Chicago.
There you are. Yeah, that's noise all right. All right, good deal,
and
thanks.
And there's other pronunciation fun, too. Originally, he had a version of Hee-Haw that was being produced in Grand Rapids, but nobody wanted to watch Hee-Hack.
Okay, that's great. Okay, thanks. Appreciate
it. And I've got a quick request.
All right, let's get this down. I actually have one of your requests on tap. So, all right, what is it?
Okay, this one is an easy request. G by whoever sang it in the early 50s.
The Crows.
Exactly.
All right, good deal. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yep. Bye.
All right. So let me write there. Got that down. Yeah. All right. I think the only one that's insulting is people who call people from Maine maniacs. However, it fits, doesn't it? The official term is Mainer. So Maryland. Now, the Marylanders, but very often considered to be old liners. from the Revolutionary War days, and we talked about Massachusetts and Michiganders, Michiganites, Michiganians. All right. Oh, man. There's been apparently a decades-long debate in Michigan over what should be the most official. Apparently, in 1981, Michiganian topped the list. But in 2017, a state senator sponsored a bill calling it Michigander. I don't know if it passed. All right, we'll pick it up there right after the news right here on WGN Radio.
Every evening, when all my dishes were pursued, I call my baby and ask her what she would do. I met some movers, but she don't seem to be dead. And then she asked me, why don't I come to her flat and have some supper and let the evening pass by. I'm making records, this sounds a groovy hi-fi. I say, yeah, yeah, that's what I say, yeah, yeah. My baby loves me, she gets me feeling so fine. When she loves me, she makes me know that she's mine. And when she kisses, I feel the fire get hot. She never misses, she gives it all that she's got. And when she asks me if everything is okay, I got my answer, the only thing I can say. I say, yeah, yeah, that's what I say, yeah, yeah. We'll play a melody and turn the lights down low so the night can see. We gotta do that, we gotta do that. We gotta do that, we gotta do that. And there'll be no one else alive in all the world except you and me. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pretty baby, I never knew such a thrill. It's hard to tell you because I'm trembling still. But pretty baby, I want you all for my own. I'm ready to leave those others alone. No need to ask me if everything is okay. I got my answer.
WGN Radio, I'm Riley James. And yes, Georgie Fame, and that was Don in Beloit who requested that. And I had mentioned that Georgie was an incredible jazz singer, and that's actually a pretty good example. That was originally an instrumental, and I think Rogers Grant wrote it. And the first person to do it was actually Mongo Santa Maria. And the guy who did the lyrics to it originally was John Hendricks. He was in a group, Lambert Hendricks and Babin, in the UK. And that was also in 63. Then 2 years later, Georgie Fame did it. And there you have it. So that was the deal. By the way, the instrumental, right after Mongo Santa Maria did it, Dave Baby Cortez did a version, and several others as well. So it was Don in Beloit who wanted to hear that, and now he's probably heard more of it than he'd ever want to. So Nick is in Baltimore. Welcome back to WGN Radio. Nick.
Hey, good morning, Raleigh. How you doing?
All right, what's happening?
I'm doing okay. I wanted to ask the question because, you know, a friend of mine, Rick, down in Arkansas, said he listened the other night and he said something about KNX, and I was going to ask you what you thought was going to happen in light of KMOX going to the Hoffman family. A new company,
right?
I guess it's a new company.
Well, they bought all of St. Louis, and a new company, but clearly, yeah, an old line family, very wealthy, and they've got the newspaper there, and they got a bunch of other holdings, and they got a sports team. You know, they're a real conglomerate, and they are absolutely the everything that Odyssey isn't. They are. They're well heeled.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
Yeah, and they're locally based, so they'll care.
Good.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll spread it around, you know, they'll buy more outlets. But
But Los Angeles is the big question. Everybody wonders, will they be next? And because obviously, you know, KNX for a while, they put it on the old KGBS, that 97.1, but that's now the Fan. It's like an ESPN, and they've got like an HD2 for KNX or something like that. And so a lot of people are looking at that saying, 50,000 wasted watts. And 1A clear, non-directional. No one really knows. You know, they've got some other properties, probably signal-wise and everything else. The best one of the group by far is K-Earth. That 101.1 dial position, just beautiful, right out of Mount Wilson, wonderful. KROQ, that's 106.7. It's always had some problems. 94.7 is also very good. That's the old KMET. And 93.1 is, of course, the old KNX FM. So that's pretty good as well. So you've got some really nice FM sticks there. And, you know, who knows? So it's all conjecture. I have not heard anything that I would consider credible that tells me what's going to happen. But a lot of people are eyeing it saying, well, I wonder.
Yeah, well, you know, I listen to KNX because I'm fascinated, you know, because you want to hear what's going on the West Coast. Since I'm able to do it on the Internet, you know, I've always been fascinated by it. But, I hope it hangs in there. You know, I'm kind of fearful of Odyssey. So,
well, absolutely. You know, this was a deal that never should have been made, and you know, it's so ironic because when you look at the start of Entercom and you look at you know, the kid's father, he was as tight as it comes with a dollar, and there was no way that he was going to be over leveraged in anything. And you look at it now and just shake your head. And you know, I think what happens is far too many of these kids, the same thing happened with Cumulus. You know, they go to the Ivy League schools, they get some MBA or something, and what works on paper will not necessarily work in real life. And the debt, you know, when CBS put those stations up for sale, there was always a big question mark because CBS had absolutely you know, no basis in that. So the money they made would have to be, you know, taxed, period. So that's why they were looking for somebody where they could get a tax incentive for that. And that was their big issue. But the other thing that I think people weren't looking hard enough who were considering being buyers wasn't that. It was that, wait a minute, CBS has been able to operate those stations like the Cadillac of stations because they had absolutely no debt service. You add debt service to it, and when you're talking about, you know, being all news, this is not a cheap proposition. And, of course, you know, you're seeing them automate some day part and doing a lot of, you know, tape repeats and all that, which, you know, just causes me to shudder all the way around. But it's a very expensive proposition. And then, of course, you have the argument that it is on AM and how many people are available to it. So, you know, I mean, they've got enough FMs there that are great, you know, great performers. But again, with that kind of debt, what do you do? Now, the argument against them selling LA, because I don't think they'd sell KNX as a standalone. I don't think there's a buyer for that. But you never know. But I think that KMOX is considered, KMOX is a major market, obviously, but it's considered more like a mid-size market, you know, than say the top 10. And I think they may look at selling more of that. But they're going to have to be selling. There's no doubt about that. So it's a question as to what.
Well, you know, I think you're right because a number of years ago, I was talking to a friend of mine who I'd worked with when I was down in Annapolis, and he wound up working for CBS. And he told me this is when it was still CBS, and he said, "Look, you got to realize that they're concentrating on their top markets. They don't care about these mid-sized markets like here or Cleveland or, you know, things like that. But they're going to concentrate on their top 10, top 5 or 10 markets."
Well,
and that's exactly what happened.
Right, absolutely. And you look at Odyssey, and, you know, while everybody's talking about KNX, and rightfully so, because it is a shame how it sounds and all that, come on, you've got Chattanooga, you've got Greensboro, you got Gainesville, you know, you got all sorts of places where, you know, you've got isolated mid-sized markets like Wichita, you know, so, and then you've got standalones. You know, just like what sold earlier this year, you know, it sold Providence VEI. That was under 5 million, but it sold in EEY in Keene. I guess that's the big Brattleboro market. I don't know. But that was, you know, I think a nod to EEI with sports and all that. But anyway, that was sold as I think it was actually sold and then it went dark. But you'd have to ask somebody there what really happened. But that's what I heard. But anyhow, so I think that what do they have standalone that's left? The first two that come to mind for me is Madison and Wilkes-Barre. So you know, we'll see what they do. It's interesting to watch, but you know, ultimately they can't survive the debt service.
Yeah, it's happening all over. And
well, and not, you know, the scary part is that, you know, hey, this is leisure time. This is broadcasting. Who cares? Nobody dies. But this is the truth with everything. I don't care if it's funeral homes or grocery chains or department stores or banks. Everything has done this. And, you know, the rules of finance have changed so much in the last 40 years or so. Things that you could never do before, like the leverage buyouts, are perfectly fine now. Things that you could value as, you know, a top-tier investment. You know, used to be impossible if you were talking about options. But so there's a lot of changes that enables people to buy it. But there's a big difference between being able to buy it and should buy it. And so I don't know how any of it works. You know, all I say is the old person's lament. I'm glad I'm not young.
That's what I always say.
Well, it is.
Now.
It's the old person's lament. We all kind of say it. I don't know what happened to the world. Yeah, right. Exactly.
It kind of left all of us behind, I guess. But I don't know. Listen, I'll just close with this. I love technology. I really do. Always have.
Oh yeah.
Not afraid of it. But the landscape has changed, and unfortunately, a lot of these places will become parking lots.
Oh, absolutely. And like you, I'm all for technology. But what we have right now is we're leading technologically while we're lagging in wisdom. And so we are now able to do things, but we are not cognizant of what we should be doing with them.
Right. Exactly. You said it perfectly.
Well, and it's really scary, say, when it's a small city where they put every of their citizens under surveillance because they can. You know, it's like, just because you can, maybe you want to think if you should.
Yeah, but they won't.
Well, that's human nature. And by the way, technology may change, but human nature is static. I don't care if you go back to Plato. It hasn't changed one iota.
It has. You're right.
No.
All right, Raleigh. I thank you for
thanks for calling.
I appreciate it.
All right. Appreciate the call.
Appreciate the program.
Yeah. Call me soon. Thanks. All right. Always good to hear from Nick. We've got Clayton in Indianapolis, Eduardo in Tampa, and you and another one of your requests coming up next on WGN Radio.
Girl, and I sleep to the sound. whippoorwill. My day is made with puppies and kittens, meadows and daisies. I'm so glad I'm a country girl.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and got an email from Jonathan in Kentucky. Hi, Jonathan. Actually, several and plenty of requests. And he said, I don't know if you know Dottie West. Oh, my God, yes. Dottie West was country music royalty. And, you know, it's interesting because she really came to the fore in what we would, you know, call old country music. You know, we're talking the 50s, and you know, where you're talking about you know, basically whining things and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of those artists didn't make it into the latter 60s because you know, as country started to change and become a lot more uptown, hate to use the term countrypolitan, but you get the idea. A lot of the Kitty Wells of the world didn't survive it. Dottie West not only survived it, she thrived. And in fact, she wrote a lot of stuff. And she was born in like 1932. So, you know, even even in the, you know, late 50s, she was absolutely an adult. She was not a young girl by any means. And when she wrote Country Girl, which she did in 1968 on RCA, and Chet Atkins produced it, it was on, you know, so come on, you get that. But what was interesting is who heard it. And it, by the way, was the first of her stuff to actually hit the Canadian country charts. But when I say it's interesting who heard it, she was recruited by McCann Erickson to write for Coca-Cola jingles. And in fact, you know Country Sunshine. Well, she co-wrote it. And it's interesting that the lyrics of the chorus are written on a grave, and she did die young. I think she was in her 50s, but that's the deal there with that. And yes, Dottie West, she did some amazing things. I loved fairly recent in the scheme of things. You're Not That Easy to Forget. I think that would have made a terrific soul record, but that's true of so many country songs. But anyway, that was Jonathan in Kentucky who requested that, and we've got several more from him that he will hear before the week is out. Clayton in Indianapolis, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh.
What's
How
up?
How is everything so far?
All right. Well, you're sounding good. It says testing new phone. Are you using it right now?
I had to switch over to the phone in the diaper changing room because the battery died out.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. This is a VTech corded phone in the diaper changing room, which is my bathroom.
Okay. All right. Yeah, well, VTech, mixed reviews, to say the less, at least about VTech.
Yeah. One that I was going to show you,
VTech
IA5845 cordless phone, old analog thing.
Yes.
Ran on a nickel-cadmium battery, but I had to rebuild the pack, and it's now a nickel-metal hydride.
Okay.
So.
And I'm sorry I missed it, but how does it sound?
It sounds decent.
Good.
Provided the battery isn't dying prematurely, but that's actually my fault because I didn't charge it long enough.
Well, that'll do it.
Yeah, and I'm looking to get a 49 megahertz cordless phone.
Okay.
Just don't know where I would get one, though.
Well, you know, they are older analog phones. I'm trying to, you know, you probably tried the eBays of the world and all of that. You know, the big problem why they went out of favor wasn't so much because of technology changing as much as how easy it was to hear them. You know, they weren't coded, they weren't scrambled. So, you know, your phone. I've told the story many times. My friend Chuck Riley was driving on the San Diego freeway, and he heard this guy call his wife in the hospital, and obviously it was like she had her jaws wired or something because she couldn't barely talk. And he said, "Well, baby, I'm thinking about you. I'll see you tomorrow." And then hangs up from that. Not 10 seconds later, calls somebody, "Hello," and he said, "I'll be over in about 10 minutes, baby. Chill the wine." So,
of course,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not worried about people listening to me, even though the phone is in my nursery. I mean, this is coming from the nursery's phone line. I just have a phone line feeding into the diaper changing room from that area.
No, there's
an. I couldn't get an extension. I couldn't get a dedicated extension from the university from that, for this bathroom.
That's a shame. Now, the other thing about the 49 megahertzers are, you know, there's very little power. I think they use like 1/1000th of a watt or something. It limited how far you could get away from the base station.
Yeah, I mean, for my nursery, using it for just inside the nursery, I'm worried about that.
All right.
But the one phone that I had that I was going to show you, VTech phone.
Hang on a minute. Don't go away. I've blown the news, and we'll be on the air in moments. Don't go away. All right. Yeah, completely blocked that. So we'll pick it up right after. I don't know if it's David Jennings or not. Who is it? Yeah, it is. All right. So we'll be on right after David Jennings. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Love the Marvelettes. And Cindy requests that 1962 on Tamla. And real sad that the internal politics at Motown caused the Marvelettes to get short shrift in favor of the Supremes. I mean, I understand why and all that, but man, they were good. And whether it was Wanda Young or Gloria, why can't I think of her last name right now? No matter who was doing lead, they were just wonderful. All right, so that said, what are we doing here? We were talking with Clayton. That's what it was, and we'll finish on phones. Actually, while we were talking, Clayton, I went and looked up to see if I could find something on eBay, and it's a Panasonic. You know, all these like Panasonic. If you're looking, you want to see KX-T. That's pretty much going to give you your 46 to 49 megahertz.
Oh,
so they have a KX-T3815 vintage cordless new open box. It's beautiful. Now it sets you back. It's $124, but. Yeah, I know, but there are others that are cheaper. But I mean, this one was absolutely in the box. But there are others you can find, and you know, you just want to look back to see. You know, obviously,
yeah.
if the model starts saying something like with Bluetooth, you don't want to go there. All right, you know, that's not going to do you any good. But you know, these were here's one for $74, and it's a KX-T3825, and it would be also that 46 to 49. So they're there, and you know, patience is your friend on these. But so look for the Panasonic KX-T, and then again, you want to read it to make sure you know what you're getting. But they were just beautiful. They call them easophones, and they were just beautiful.
I find that kind of interesting. And I'm looking into, potentially for my nursery, getting a Southwestern Bell FF905 or FF915 phone, which is a 900 megahertz phone. I just don't know, again, where I would find that for a decent price.
Well, if you're patient, there again, start looking at eBay and other places like that. They come up.
Yeah, my question is, I mean, inside of an apartment building like this, if I'm just in my nursery, and maybe I go somewhere outside the nursery a good ways, would the FF905 or FF915 reach?
Let me think on that. But let me go back to Southwestern Bell for a minute, because the phones you're looking at, those 900 megahertz, you know, obviously Southwestern Bell didn't make phones. You know that. People who made the phone was Con Air. So you want to look for, you can start looking for it that way. Con Air phones from that period to see. And they might have licensed it to other companies as well.
Yeah. The funny part is I remember it being like a Southwestern Bell FF series, but that leads me to wonder what the Con Air model number is.
That I don't, well, there might not, I'm not sure how that would work, but yes, the FF, they were known as the Freedom phones, right? It's just a question of finding the time to do the search, and you'll really start to come up with what you need. You'd be surprised.
Yeah, and I kind of wonder what kind of phone this sounds like speaking on.
Oh, the phone you're on now. Obviously, it sounds perfectly fine. I mean, I've got some ambient noise, but nah, it's not from the phone.
Well, basically, that's all. That part of that is I'm playing around with the cord.
Right, and that's what I'm hearing. But no, you're absolutely fine. So, me, I'm a Western Electric girl, so I like their stuff.
You know what, though? There's actually some, in my laundry room, there's a Western Electric 2500 in my laundry room.
Uh-huh.
And then in my office cubicle, there's actually a 5-line, maybe you've heard me say this before, but it's a 2565.
Uh-huh.
And that's really the only Western Electric stuff I have.
Well, yeah, that 2500 was that desktop touch tone phone, and I'll tell you what, it came in some of the strangest colors, like that, well, you might not be able to see them, but a green and a blue that were just a baby blue, and it's like, what are you people thinking? That was the deal. But yeah, the beauty of this is that it's all available, but you know, when you see it in its outrageous price, you just pass it and wait for it to come up cheaper. It will.
Yeah, like imagine you call my house one day, and you pick up, like I pick up, and all this is the diaper room, Clayton speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, 99% of your callers are going to have absolutely no idea what you're speaking on, and worse yet, don't care. But I'm delighted that you do, and I'll talk to you soon.
Alrighty.
Okay, thanks. All right, fun stuff. 888-876-5593, 8888-RALEIGH. Yeah, when you start to talk about, you know, how reception is and how far you can get away, there's so many different things that come into play there that I will never claim to be an expert. Laura in Willowbrook, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh.
How are you?
I'm glad to get you.
I'm glad you called.
Good.
Good, all right.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, well, I heard you talking about Chicago radio history.
Yes.
And hopefully you can figure out what I'm talking about. Years ago, at least 10 years ago, maybe more, there used to be a radio station. I want to say it was WBIG.
1280 AM?
I think so, yeah. Yep. And they used to do their radio shopping show.
Yep.
Do you know anything about it, or does it still exist?
Yeah, no. That 1280 was WBIG from like 1991 till this year. It was, originally they were like a simulcast, but then they broke away. But originally they were WMRO, and I think it stood for Martin O'Brien or some Martin R. O'Brien, and it was a little Aurora station. And then it became YSY for a few years and was simulcasting their FM as Y108. And then, you know, BIG for a long time. And now they're TFN, and I don't know what they're doing. But when you're talking about those shopping shows, this was a staple on talk shows, talk stations around the country. Years ago, really? a station in Texas trademarked the term, and a lot of stations got in trouble for using it. They called it Tradio. And people would call, and you know, all the various stations would have different rules. Like my favorite was some they weren't allowed to say what the price of the item was, and so what? And in the 60s, what people would do was they would talk about it as if they were buying green stamps, because you know a book of green stamps was worth $3. So they'd say like, "This will cost 3 books of green stamps," and you know it was a $9 item. No. You know, that kind of stuff. But you know, some of the things were just hilarious. People were selling everything. And one of my favorites was this woman who called, and she said, "I'm selling 3 cannibals." Well, what she meant, and so the host was just really taken aback. "What do you mean? Well, what are they?" "Well, like most of them, they're green, they're leafy." But she was talking about cannibals, a plant. To listen to it, it came across as she was selling cannibals. And so, you know, it's always been a staple. And then going back further, for a while, when Gordon McClendon bought a frequency in Los Angeles, he turned it into K-Ads. It was the all-classified advertising radio station. It was automated, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the problem was, you might have to listen for 7 hours before you'd hear about a refrigerator you wanted. You know, they never really could figure out how to get it in any item. But the idea of trade line or Tradio or all that, I don't think there was a talk station in America that didn't have that on the weekend at least somewhere.
Whoa, I didn't know that. I bought a few things, but it was mostly like spend $50 at a restaurant and you get $200 worth or something like that.
Okay. Yeah, no, those.
But I didn't know they had all that kind of stuff. That's cool.
Oh, all across the, you know, especially on weekends when you're trying to fill that time. Long before you could just use satellite programming, you had to do something. And so, they used to call themselves on BIG the Big One, and they just dropped those calls this year. And I don't know what I think Aurora, Naperville, Waltham, whoever they are, I don't know what they are doing. So if somebody can in the Chicago area can turn on 1280 WTFN and tell me, because I don't know. So Chuck Shaden worked there for years, and of course his radio theater, you know, that was during the WMRO days. And Bruce Drennan, he did a talk show there, sports obviously, and before he went to TV News, and I mean, this is going way back. This is when they were MRO in the 40s. John Drury was there. And so, you know, a lot of people. But then, of course, once syndicated radio was available, they had some Bloomberg and some Fox Sports and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
You talking John Drury, the news TV guy?
Yes, absolutely.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. He Emmy Award winning guy. Yeah, he used to be a talk personality on WMRO and was doing a talk show there. And like I said, they came on the air in 1938, and they stayed with those call letters till 1989. And they were basically what we would call a full service station. You know, they ran the gamut. And he absolutely was there. WMRO was on his resume, no doubt about it.
I'm so glad to get all kinds of information.
Yeah.
And real quick.
But what, by the way, what you're talking about on 1280, they used to call it the Big Radio Shopping Show.
Yeah.
And it was an interactive home shopping broadcast where you could, you know, buy, sell, or trade. So, that was a big thing for them. But like I say, just every talk station did it.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Boy, I guess I didn't flip channels much.
Well, you know, and who knows? Maybe no one else in Chicago did. If you're really major market and have deluxe bucks, maybe you decide you're not doing it. You know, but when you're an also ran like 1280 in Aurora, you're doing it.
Well, I'm curious too. I know you know so much, and everybody tells you that, but like, how if you haven't worked there, like, do you like in your free? Not that you have free time, but if you did, are you just looking up information? And where do you find all this information out? I mean,
well,
how would you know
there
used, that when you didn't even work there?
There used to be two wonderful sources back when Broadcasting Magazine was owned by Saul Tashoff, literally a family company. They did the Broadcasting Yearbook every year, and I read it cover to cover. You betcha. Huh? And so, you know, I remember the 1960 edition. I came across one recently. It would cost me $4. By the time they stopped publishing, it was probably, you know, $200. But anyway, they're gone now. But back in the day, they used to be wonderful, and the ads they'd have in there were just hilarious. And there were other, I thought they were hilarious. There were other other publications like that as well. So I subscribed to everything. And of course, you know, Broadcasting Magazine would feature what stations were doing from time to time with different features and all that kind of stuff. So that was part of it. Then, of course, anytime I was going anywhere, you know, like I'm coming to Chicago, well, you know I'm bringing a radio, and you know that I'm going to listen to everything on it. So, you know, it's like going to New York. You want to see the Statue of Liberty? No, I want to go to WMCA, 13th floor. Thank you. But, you know, that was sort of, you know, and that's the way it is. And I've lived in 32 cities, so I haven't missed too many.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, that's radio.
A lot.
That's radio.
Okay.
You know, they used to have, when they'd put out the ads wanting disc jockeys, they'd always say, no floaters nor drifters need apply. I couldn't, you know, I absolutely couldn't, you know. Now, how many markets have you worked in? This year, three of them, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, you sure had to, like, travel, that's for sure.
Well, yeah. I don't play well with others. So, you know, that's one of the things. You look at me the wrong way, I'm gone. So, anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, all right.
The last thing, is there still a radio magazine?
No, not really. There are there are online some things like Inside Radio and other things online, but in the way that we used to, and for fans, by the way, there's still like DXing magazines and things like that, but you know, but the way it used to be with the trade magazines, no, but there's a number of online sources and you can find it. All Access used to be great. They're completely gone now. But Inside Radio is still there, and I'm trying to think of what else clogs my inbox. Usually I hit delete, but in the next week or so, I'll try to make note of it, and I'll let you know what's still coming in.
All right, sounds good. Thanks so much,
all right.
Ellie.
Thanks for calling, Laura.
Have a good day.
Okay.
All right, take care.
All right, so good to hear from Laura. We'll hear from Eduardo next right here on WGN Radio.
Amber waves of grain, a purple mountain majesties. Above the fruited plain. But now wait a minute, I'm talking about America, sweet America. You know, God done shed his grace on thee.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. So Linda called the other night, I think she was a first-time caller also from Chicago, and said, will you play Ray Charles' God Bless America? And I thought to myself, I'm not sure he ever did that, but okay. And when I started to go through flipping through 45s, I realized that 1972 on ABC, he did America the Beautiful. So I think that is what Linda was talking about. And that was when Ray Charles had started his Tangerine Records company, but that was still an ABC Records product. And there you have it. So hopefully that's the one, and hopefully she heard it. 888-876-5593. Eduardo is in Tampa, and we've got about 30 seconds here. So you got a request for me?
Yeah, before I go into my topic and maybe after the news, I'm going to request Blood, Sweat, and Tears, David Clinton Thomas. I saw him on the Sunday Passage.
Okay.
They list the names of artists that passed away. So that came in the Sunday CBS News.
You will hear some David Clayton Thomas next. Don't go away. Stay where you are. And we'll pick it up right there after the news and more with Eduardo, and hopefully you too, coming up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yeah, I hate to say that David Clayton Thomas is now past tense. As far as I'm concerned, he was the voice of Blood, Sweat, and Tears. He wrote Lucretia Mickeyville as well. 1970, it was a single from Columbia. And we were talking about Eduardo in Tampa. So, Eduardo, carry on.
Oh, well, thank you for playing the song. Yeah, thank you very much.
Oh, yeah, and Billy Bob and Bourbonnais wanted to hear it too. So, two with one, the good deal.
Yeah. Well, another thing I saw on Sunday was this Rashi Sharma. He's in California. And over the past 10 years, he interviewed 3,000 World War II vets. And he's going to interview some more. So pretty interesting story that somebody... And he started this when he was in high school.
Yeah. So, and he better continue very quickly, because the amount that's possible to interview is dwindling by the hour.
Yeah. And he videotaped him, and so
yeah,
good
no,
for him
I,
that he did something like that.
I think that's great. And I think he's interviewed over 3,000 now since mm-hmm. high school. He's got a nonprofit, Remember World War II, and he'd like to make a living memorial. And that's good that CBS News and all that. And I think you know, there's been a lot of interest on the YouTube channel there as well, so you can watch those interviews. And I've been doing it for
Hugh Harmon. He's the guy that interviewed him. Yeah,
yeah, 10 years. Pretty good. Yeah, absolutely. And so he's. I think he's the kid's. Not a kid anymore, but Sharma's now about 28, and he said he spent every single day of the last 10 years doing this. Wow. And
he went across the country, I believe, too. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Right. He interviewed a guy, a Marine over 100 years old in New York, and you know, fascinating. And as far as that goes, and he was originally from Los Angeles area, Southern California, and he wound up creating a map of places he hoped to visit, and he got there. So it's. It's neat. And, you know, thank God it's gotten a lot of traction, and it's funded by donations and all of that. When he started it, there were 700,000 World War II vets, known World War II vets alive, and now there's less than 30,000.
Okay.
You know, but, man, I'll tell you, a decade from now, that'll be less than 3, probably.
Yeah.
So time
That'll
is a wasting.
Shame, but we'll miss them all,
Yeah, time is a wasting. So it's good that he's dedicated to doing it, and that he recognizes that it only exists in a in a period of time, that they will be gone. Yeah.
Yeah, very good for him. Well,
absolutely.
I'll leave you, because we're inside less than an hour, but I'll call back if I have anything more good tomorrow, Thursday.
I'll look forward to it.
Thank you very much, Robbie.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah, there's so many things I mentioned before when I used to do market profiles. I life got in the way, and I only did 10 or 11 of them. And man, I regret that now, because that was 40, 50 years ago when everybody was still alive and there were things to talk about. And it never really occurred to me that if I don't do it now, I'll be doing it never. And that's pretty much it, because pretty much everybody is gone. It could probably still be done, from publications and that kind of stuff, but it's priceless to talk to the people who were on the scene at the time, and that's no longer going to be possible. So I'm glad that Sharma is aware of that and doing this every darn day of his life. Ralph in Rockford, what's up?
Hello, can you hear me?
I hear you fine. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Well, thank you very much. I thank you very much for playing Clayton Thomas. That was very nice.
Sure.
Very good song. It reminded me a little bit of, I know that you once mentioned you liked Bob Eubanks, too, and I liked him, too, Bob Eubanks. You know, I think he did the... the marriage stuff, you know.
The Newlywed Game, right. Right. I always contended that they had to do pre-interviews, and anybody who actually was bright didn't qualify to be on the show, because they found the dumbest people I'd ever seen, and that's what made it so funny.
Well, I thought it was very funny when he asked the question, the three couples there, and... How would you describe, if you had a song to describe your wedding night? And it said, blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah. That's
thought
pretty good.
That was pretty funny. And I hope that this famous singer that married you last weekend, I hope they had a better experience.
Oh, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did.
Well, I hope so. Well, there was one problem. Somebody told me that American football is that, that... this one football player, he married, and he was sure that he had married a tight end, and he found out she was a wide receiver.
Oh, yeah, okay. Very good. All right. Yeah, right. You'll be here all week. Try the veal. All right.
Okay. Well, anyway, I was surprised. I was just going to call you and request you know, Georgie Fame, Yeah Yeah, and somebody from Beloit requested it, and you played it.
Absolutely, yeah, I like it. And a lot of people who know the hit from American radio didn't realize that it was a Mungo Santa Maria instrumental.
Yeah, yeah, it was before, but Georgie Fame, like you've always said, you like him very much because he has so much jazz.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And he did a good job with that.
Yeah, and Georgie Fame, he in 65, it came out to be the number one in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, big record, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember something not so pleasant that, you know, I grew up a few years in a Catholic monastery, and I was listening to either Yeah Yeah or to Eric Burden and the Animals, and then the priest came and said, "You better turn in your radio. I'm going to confiscate it."
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah, and it was a beautiful radio. It was Schaub Lorenz.
Oh, no. Did he confiscate it?
Well, he confiscated it. He said, "Come back at the end of semester and I'll give it back to you." But
did he?
I had to turn it in. But the thing is, the amazing thing is that was in 1965. And if somebody had told me that in 1995 you're going to meet Eric Burden in Rockford, Illinois, I said, no, that's not going to be possible.
Yeah, you never know. Life is funny, yeah, like that. It turns on a dime.
Yeah. Yeah, well, right. I mean, and I met Eric Burden in 1996 in Rockford. They had a beautiful show that was called On the Waterfront.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so I went where he was in the tent, and I talked to him for about half an hour. And well, he was such a nice guy, you know, Eric Burden. I hope he's still alive.
Yes, as far as I know, he is, yes.
Yeah, yeah, he must be 85, and... another reason I called you today is because, first of all, I wanted to thank you for your wonderful English lesson that you gave us. You gave us a few weeks ago. Now, as an English teacher, I don't feel guilty anymore if I use a preposition at the end of a sentence.
Oh, I know, and I still hate that. It drives me crazy when I hear that. And they say it's okay and there's no rule against it. And then I hate it when people add prepositions that just don't need to be there. Like, you know, where will you be at? No, where will you be? Yeah. That's all you need to say. You know? Yeah, it drives me crazy.
Yeah, well, it drives me crazy too because I'm trying to teach English, you know.
Yeah.
I don't even know how I got my degrees to do it, you know. I don't know how I got it.
Well, yeah, you know, I think every language has its idiosyncrasies. And while English can be downright confusing when you have 7 different words that have the same vowels in them but are pronounced completely different ways, that's not just English. Every language has its oddities.
Oh, yeah, and English especially, it was not easy for me. To learn English and get a degree in it.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I ran around the campus 4 years and said, "Where is it? Where is it? Where is it?" And after 4 years, they said, "Give this idiot his degree." And I said, "There it is. There it is.
So funny. Well, so you spoke as a child growing up. You started with German, right?
Yeah, I had to, you know, I was... very fortunately, I was born right at the border of West Germany, as far as you can go, and Holland and Belgium.
All right.
You know, so I was a little bit, you know, of course, my native language is German, and I do, believe it or not, I have a master's degree in German, and I've lectured here in Beloit. I've lectured at the Beloit College sometimes. You know,
nice.
I didn't teach there. I cannot say I teach there, but then I taught there. But then, of course, the students liked me because I am a native speaker, and then they invited me every weekend. That is called, in German, it's called a Stammtisch.
Uh-huh.
A Stammtisch means where people meet for the weekend in a certain restaurant or pub and get together there and play cards and have a few drinks, you know.
Good.
So, yeah, well, it was okay. I didn't mind it at all. So that's, you know, I've used my, so that told me I was an associate professor for German. So
nice. Well, the nice thing about starting out speaking native, German, is that English is very Germanic. And so pronunciation becomes easier than if it were a Romance language.
Yeah, but I have something a little bit here, a little surprise, not surprise, but something like I was talking about, you were talking about the lady from England. She had her biggest hit was Walking Back to Happiness.
What's her name? Helen Shapiro.
Yeah, Helen Shapiro. And now I just wanted to, I have more of that later on, not tonight, but I have four things here that might be a little bit of Walking Back to Happiness, a little bit to laugh about. And for example, in Western Europe and Eastern Europe, they have a problem with the English language, okay? And now here, for example, at a boutique in Paris, it says, stresses for street walking. And then in another hotel here, I think, I don't know where it was, but it is inappropriate to entertain guests of the opposite sex in our rooms.
Right.
It is suggested to use the lobby for this purpose.
Right, right. Yeah, I've seen these signs. They're hilarious. Yeah. And as far as the French, of course, they're, even if they speak perfect English, they're not going to speak it to you. They're, very, very snooty that way.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny. Another one was take advantage of the chambermaid,
Right.
And then another one, in a dry cleaning business, it said, drop your trousers here.
Right. Now, there's so many of those. And sadly, what's really alarming to me isn't somebody who puts up a sign that can be misread, but it's advertising agencies who clearly should know what they're doing, who have campaigns where they've spent a fortune, and it absolutely has a different meaning in the language that they're speaking. Yeah. I love those.
Right. But I love them, too. That's why I cut them out. It was those. We're in a German magazine. Like
right.
Life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so, like Coors, you wouldn't expect them to make this mistake, but their slogan was Turn It Loose, and they went ahead and translated it to Spanish, not understanding that it meant suffering from diarrhea.
Right.
So many. I mean, how could Ford make a Nova, in Mexico? Of course it means no go, and on and on. The lists are hilarious. And which was the one in Chinese that brings back your dead ancestors?
Yeah. Well, there are sometimes, even I have read sometimes, and they admitted it, that Toyota once had an ad here in the United States, nothing will prevent us from preventing you to buy a Toyota.
Yeah.
So that's pretty funny. That means don't buy it.
Of course it does. Of course it does. Yeah. And it's just amazing to me that the people who were in those departments don't understand. Yeah, it was Come Alive with Pepsi. You remember that? Come Alive, you're in the Pepsi generation. And, of course, there it meant Pepsi brings your ancestors back from the dead. So, but how is it they can spend this much money and not have figured this out before it?
Right. Well, that's because they don't run it through, a test reading, for example. Believe it or not, but I find even in American papers where they do, people who write these articles, they have no idea between what is the difference between the past tense and the present perfect.
Right. Well, people don't even know that in English, unfortunately. They're still ending their sentences with a preposition.
Yeah, right, but the past tense is used for completed action in a finished period of time. For example, yesterday, last week, before the war, and et cetera.
Right.
Whereas the perfect tense, or you know it from Latin because you had Latin.
Right, right. Yeah, it was completed before another action started. Right, of course.
Right.
So it clarifies what came first. You know, and of course, in Latin, where they don't have any word order, it's totally different. But yeah,
right. Yeah. Well, anyway, absolutely. Let's go back for music just 1 minute. I wanted to tell you that yesterday, Richard Starkey turned 86. He had a birthday.
Yes.
Yeah, Ringo Starr.
Yes, yes, no, aware.
Yeah.
Yes, I've got a lot of those this date in history stuff, and I usually don't do much with it unless it's very quiet.
I'm mentioning it because I had the privilege in 1964. My father took me. I was a young boy to see the Beatles in Germany. That was very unusual.
In Hamburg.
No, it was in Essen.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, they had a three-town. Well, amazingly enough, a little bit ironic, because later on, I taught English in Essen at the Krupp Thyssenwerks. That was unusual. They, hired me right out of when I got my degree in English here in America. They hired me right out there to teach there.
Yeah. You mentioned Ringo Starr. Well, tomorrow, Louis Jordan would have been 118. So, and John says, shut up now. All right, I will. I think we have commercials to play, so I will talk to you later.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Well, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.
All right, so that's where we'll pick it up after the news on WGN Radio. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. Okay. That's fine.
You're my love, you're my angel, you're the girl of my dream. I'd like to thank you for waiting patiently.
Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Shep in the Limelight, Daddy's Home. That was Robert's request, 1961 on Hull. And it is an answer record. And when Robert called and asked for that, I mentioned it was an answer record, which he didn't seem to realize. And it was one written by the same James Shepherd as in Shep in the Limelights. But originally, Shep was with the Heartbeats when he wrote A Thousand Miles Away.
You're a thousand miles away. You remember you by. Oh, my darling, dry your eyes. Daddy's coming home soon. On my knees every day. Baby, just for you. Hope you always want me to. Daddy's coming
So that's the way it was in 1956 on Hull and later released on Rama when James Shepherd wrote and recorded A Thousand Miles Away. That was when he was with the Heartbeats. And the story goes that his girlfriend had moved to Texas and therefore he wrote it. And it was interesting because it kicked off a cycle of six Lynx songs that he wrote over the next 6 years. And, of course, the most infamous other than A Thousand Miles Away was the culmination of Daddy's Home. But there was also 500 Miles to Go on G, and there were others as well. Now, James Shepherd, by all accounts, was a good guy originally. And I say that because he was a nasty drunk. One of the members of the band said, you know, he was a beautiful person, he just drank too much. And in fact, that's why when Shep and the Limelights had a moment of success in 1961, they disbanded not too long afterwards because of Shep's drinking. And agents, promoters, record companies, no one would work with them after a while. So that was the deal. The Heartbeats broke up in 59 over just that issue. And in fact, James Shepherd opened a restaurant in Queens. And that's when he put together Shep and the Limelights. And a lot of people thought, well, that's a new start for him. But no, it was actually the same deal all over again, sorry to say. That was on Hull also. Hull was kind of a dead label by that time, but they had entered into a deal with Empire to restart the label, ABC Paramount, and to promoted by them, distributed by them, I should say. And so the first couple came up on their subsidiary APT, APT. You'll see that on a lot of labels. But then Hit with Daddy's Home, and that that was also a Hull imprint. And he followed it with additional cycle chapters like Three Steps from the Altar, Our Anniversary, What Did Daddy Do? And I think all told, there were 9 songs of the same theme, and they released an album, Our Anniversary, but, you know, it didn't match the sales of Daddy's Home with Shep and the Limelights, and of course, that didn't match the Heartbeats, 1,000 Miles Away, and so, but here's you know, the problem is James Shepherd's making enough money and doing gigs on the road when people are willing to book him, that he can continue to drink, basically. And that was absolutely his undoing. Now, it was interesting that when he wrote Daddy's Home, undisputably a hit, it was actually not only a continuation of the story that started with A Thousand Miles Away, but the start of a lawsuit because the publishing arm of Hull Records was Keel Music. And this will wind up in Moish Levy's hands, the Roulette Records publishing company. They had acquired the copyright from the publisher. So, you know, the two songs really weren't alike except for the Lynx storylines. But what happened was in 1964, a New York federal court awarded all the royalties of Daddy's Home to Moish Levy. And so that caused Hull Records to fold entirely, and that caused the end of Shep and the Limelights, drinking or not. But believe me, that lawsuit just increased James Shepherd's pension to drink. And at that point, it was messed up. He was not showing up for recording sessions. He was not showing up for gigs that had been booked. And so this was it. And, you know, in fact, when the court decision happened, he wrote some other things that were, you know, very sad. But no one was surprised, given his history, that he'd be found murdered. And he was, in January of 1970, murdered in his car on the Long Island Expressway. And it was, quote unquote, an apparent robbery. Well, really? All right, now why I say that is because you've still got Roulette and Moish Levy in the story, and, well, you know about their proclivities. So, needless to say, Roulette owned the rights to the two biggest songs. They successfully sued Shepherd for the royalties, you know, a lot of people are saying this wasn't so random after all. He had reformed Shep and the Limelights. But, you know, on the other hand, they were dead and gone by this time. Regardless, it was a tragic end to somebody who was clearly very troubled. All right, so there you go. Now you know. And Robert didn't realize all that when he was requesting it, I am sure. We'll have more of your requests all week long. And this is one of those things, like I say, I spent a couple hours before the show not preparing for what we talk about necessarily, but preparing to try and not lose a lot of your requests. And we've got a lot more. In fact, we've got David on the north side who wants a Big Mama Thornton, Let Your Tears Fall, Baby. I hope I'd have gotten to that tonight. I'll definitely get to Jackie Ross. Chuck and Downers Grove wanted Selfish One, so we'll play that as our last song tonight. John wanted Oh What a Night. I'm playing the original 1956 version on VJ, of course, not the remake on Cadet. And we'll do that hopefully tomorrow night. But we've got a lot coming up. Jonathan in Kentucky had some other requests, and Lisa in Joliet, and Bruno, her dog, and Evelyn in Michigan. And even more from Don and Beloit and Cindy in Chicago. And another one from Robert. And I still have on my list, because he's been requesting since before he moved, Robert in Stickney, but he's not in Stickney anymore. He's somewhere else. All right. So that's the deal. 888-876-5593. David is in Muskegon. So David, welcome back to WGN Radio. What's on your mind? Well, obviously nothing. That's right. David hung up. All right. Well, it happens. What can I tell you? More time for you. 888-876-5593. Yeah, getting back to we were talking about names and what happened to them here. The correct names for people coming from various states. Mostly it's A-N at the end of it, Nebraskans, things like that. And sometimes we have some different ones that we went over. But I mentioned before that it's New Hampshireites, but apparently it's broken down by gender, and certainly in the legislature there. New Hampshire men and New Hampshire women. They're saying it in Nashua, I guess. And New Jerseyites, right, usually. New Mexicans. Well, now that's interesting, because yes, New Mexicans, but you don't, just like with Texas, you get other names as well. In Texas, you're a Texan. Well, some people from far south Texas refer to themselves as Tejanos. Well, I'll leave it to you which is which. Utah was a weird one. Utahn. U-T-A-H-N, not U-T-H-A-N, not Utah-N, but I'm not going to get through it. U-T-A-H-N, Utahn. All right, probably don't want to talk to anybody there anyway. Vermont, well, some locals call them woodchucks, but they're Vermonters. And Virginian, well, you know that. And Washingtonian, you know that. And West Virginia, too, as far as that goes. But what I found interesting was fights that have arisen over how to pronounce the names of the states. Not the residents therein, but the actual names. Missouri, case in point. There is a huge argument to this day over it's Missouri, Missouri, or Missouri. And same thing like Miami and Miami. You get that a lot. And I don't think there's ever been any definitive ruling on this. I don't know who'd do the ruling. Not like France, where they actually have people who control the language. But here, I don't know. But tempers rise when the Missouri side hears somebody voting for Missouri. So I leave that to you. But it reminds me of a wonderful Borscht Belt joke. Some of those comedians were hilarious. And it's a guy who have wanted all his life to go to Hawaii. He finally gets there, and he's a little concerned about the pronunciation, so he stops someone on the street and says, "Excuse me, sir, can you tell me, is it Hawaii or Hawaii?" And the guy says, "Hawaii." He says, "Oh, thank you, now I know." And the guy says, "You're welcome." So, I know, it's terrible. But in any event, the things that people care about or don't care about, there you have it. So 888-876-5593. I care about another one of your requests, and it will be the last one of the night for Chuck and Downers Grove coming up on WGN Radio.
Sits on a shelf.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. What a great song. Yeah, Jackie Ross on Chess, 1964, July of 64, actually. And Carl Smith and Wilfred McKinley wrote that, and it was just absolutely wonderful. And yeah, there's a backstory there about what happened at Chess, but that's for another night for sure. So 888-876-5593. Not many people have covered Selfish One, of which I know, but one of them that comes to mind, and it was probably like 15 years later or so, but Diana Ross did it in the latter 80s. So yeah, you just never know. All right, so 888-876-5593. That takes us to Ken in Arlington Heights. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, good evening, Raleigh. How are you?
All right. How about yourself?
I'm doing well.
All right.
So, curious question, and maybe you can answer it. It's about the Wrecking Crew.
Yeah.
I don't like the name. I don't know how. I guess it's because the original members didn't play on a lot of the songs.
No, that's not what it was.
How did these musicians get paid? Were they paid like just a flat fee to be a studio musician?
Union.
And then, or did they get royalties as well?
They didn't get royalties, but they got union rights for the session. But let's talk about the Wrecking Crew, because that was a big fight between Hal Blaine and Carol Kaye, and she's a wonderful bassist. When Hal wrote his book in 1990, that's when he really popularized the Wrecking Crew, and Carol said, "We never were the Wrecking Crew. We were never called back. He just made this up for his book." Well, in a way, they're both right. They never were called a Wrecking Crew, ever. So Carol is right about that. However, the phrase didn't originate with the book or with Hal. When they were first playing in the early 60s, well, actually, some of them in the 50s, but, you know, as rock and roll was starting to develop, a lot of the seasoned studio guys who were playing quote-unquote good music really resented the rock and roll. And some of them would refer to, "Oh, it's the Wrecking Crew, wrecking the music again." You know, so it did exist, but the group were never known for that, because the other thing is, when a producer is doing a session, he doesn't call a group of musicians. He calls the individual musicians he wants, you know, the bass player, the guitar player, the drummer, whatever. And, you know, that's collectively known as first call, the guys who, like a Phil Spector, the guys he's going to try for his first call. He wants these players. And that's true in Nashville and New York as well. So, but studio musicians are islands. They don't work as a group. They work as individuals. And so that's the deal with the Wrecking Crew. But in terms of how that happens, you know, Nashville, New York, Los Angeles, these are heavily music union markets. And so, consequently, there's absolute rules on what you get for your session fee, and also not only what you get for your session fee, but your pension and welfare contribution, because that comes into play as well. But no, as a session musician, you are not getting royalties on a song. It's one and done. You go in there, you do it, you're done.
But would these musicians then tour with the artist?
Sometimes and sometimes not. Case in point, one of the first call guitarists in the early 60s was Glenn Campbell. He played on a ton of things before anybody knew who he was. But he did tour. He was a touring guy with the Beach Boys from time to time. So, you know, a lot of things would happen, but it wasn't a given. And, you know, the group itself would have very little say in most cases over who the studio musicians were or how it was going to be produced.
And then why would they, I also heard that they would be, these musicians would be used in place of the members of some of these bands.
Almost always. Not sometimes. Almost always. Because a lot of these bands were not, not going to be great on a record, period. You're going to get a better sound out of one of your studio pros. That's why.
But then what are you going to get on the tour?
Well, you've heard them. in some cases it's fine, in some cases it's not. But remember, the producer doesn't care about the tour. The producer cares about the record. You know, and the producer basically, you know, either works independently or works for a record company. But either way, his goal is to produce a hit record. You know, he's not the Red Cross. It's not, you know, it's not a charitable organization. It's business. And so years ago when my favorite top 40 or rock and roll, if you will, producer by far was Snuff Garrett. I loved him. And Snuff was fun, and he was truly funny as well. And one of the fights he'd have routinely was with Gene McDaniels, or as Gene used to say, I'm Eugene McDaniels. Anyway, Eugene wanted to record serious stuff. And, you know, Snuff would have to repeatedly say, now, Gene, Liberty is a for-profit company. Just record this. And so, you know, that should be the goal of every producer, because that's why they're there. They're there to make a hit record so the record label makes money. It's that simple.
Does this still exist in some way, shape, or form today?
You'd have to ask somebody who's in it today. I don't know. I have no idea how this
studio
works.
Musicians working and then...
You know, everybody I know is dead. You know, so I don't know what they do today. You know, my, if you're talking about the 50s, even the 60s, even the early 70s, and I mean the early 70s, I got it down. You're talking more recent than that, you got to talk to somebody else. One big change happened, actually, if we're talking about, you know, rock and roll, if you will, top 40 music in the 60s. Well, there were two changes. One, everybody talks about what the Beatles did for music. The hell with what they did for music. What they did was they sold albums. And the fact that they sold albums, that's what made the record industry big bucks, because singles don't make you money. And prior to the Beatles, rock and roll artists sold singles. So they changed.
Right. Nobody was buying albums.
That's correct. Right. You'd look at the charts, and the number one record might be Bebopalula, but the number one album was Theme from South Pacific. You know, so that's the way that would work. So the Beatles gave us the impetus to actually make big money out of this industry. Well, what also happened was now you were having artists who wrote the stuff. And that heretofore, an artist was at the whim of the producer. Go in, this is what you're going to cut. But you were starting to see more of the right. And now today, that I will say for sure, is most of the hit acts are creating their own songs. That was not a factor at all back in the day.
Well, thank you, Rally, for the answer. You're the best. I have a great evening here.
Thanks for calling. Do it again, Ken. Thanks. Yeah.
Bye-bye.
And that's not to say nobody wrote. I mean, famously, when the Everly Brothers were off cadence and the edict came down that they couldn't record Boudreaux Bryant songs because of a fight with Acuff Rose, they wound up on their first release writing it themselves on Warner Brothers. And Kathy's Clown was a big hit. It stunned everybody, but it was. So, yeah, some do write. But now it's the norm. Then it was the exception. So there you have that. All right. Well, 21 hours from now, we will reconvene and do it all again, and we will play your requests and hopefully take your calls, and whatever's on your mind will be on mine. Until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. Above all, I thank you for calling WGN Radio.
By Wobot, plus Booty Nights, and Gobble Squabble, I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News. Real news, real stories, real fun. Get a Waymo, fast and curious in San Francisco as some slick suspect pulls up to a yoga studio in a self-driving taxi and proceeds to run in and snatch a bunch of men's shorts. Johnny Grab Cab then jumps back in the waiting Waymo, which whisks Cheat My Shorts off into the riled flue yonder. 6 months later, cops still haven't cracked the cuckoo case, in spite of all the cameras inside Nervy the Gloved Bug, Car Grifty Score, where are you? Naked Nocturne, he is curious fellow, the photog whose show naturel is full frontal flex and the city, New York Mag reveals. Ryan McGinley and his kinky candid camera peekabooed his bare naked buddies overnights all around town. Take a pander at Splash Dance in the Central Park fountain, eyes wide strut. One time, cops caught them carousing completely unclad by a car wash, and crowed, you call this art? Hey boys, this is New York. Revenge of the Turkeys, Spree Range Birds, Wild Turkey Catch a Quarry served cold in a Bay Area community. As locals go loco over herky-jerky turkeys in the straw striking back, the hunted now hunting the hunters as angry birds get aggressive all round. One old lady got attacked from behind by a tenacious turkey and ended up in the ER. Turks and chaos as some riled turkeys are now 4 feet tall, weighing 25 pounds. And remember WKRP Nation, turns out turkeys can fly. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.